Second hour here on the opening lines. Yep, you heard it. We are now on new time, 7 to 9 Pacific time out here on the West Coast. So make sure you check that out because guess what? The NFL is so big and there's so much going on that 1 hour is not enough. So we'll be here for two every single Sunday, 7 to 9 Pacific time. Wes Reynolds is part of that we. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. Before we get to Matt Eumanns, who joins us in a couple of minutes, let's start with a game that I was in on, and I got in on this one early too. I got in actually on the two of the favorites this week, Wes. Early because just from a numbers perspective, I was like, these aren't going to stay below a touchdown. It was San Francisco minus 6.5 and it was Baltimore minus 6.5. And out of the two, I was a lot more comfortable as the injury started piling up for San Francisco with Baltimore. So Baltimore takes on Houston today and they get a relatively comfortable win, like never really in doubt for the Baltimore Ravens, 33-16, but not overly dominant. Here's the thing, as Baltimore now looks ahead to Kansas City on Monday night, which is going to be a massive contest. Baltimore playing host, they're a 3-point favorite, total 52.5. The Ravens today, some key stats. First of which is Lamar Jackson, again, continuing to be dynamic downfield, 8.5 yards per attempt, one touchdown that's through the air. But the other part, 6.2 yards per rush on the ground. They were very dominant. And I know this is, we're talking about this Baltimore team. But I can't help but come away with this game and think, Wes, this Texans team's in trouble, man. Their defense is not good. It's two games now that they cannot stop the run whatsoever. Their secondary is already suffering as it is. This is a Texans team now that I have some real concerns about. I thought they could get to like 8-8 and be relatively competitive. Now you get Pittsburgh on the other side next week. Like, yeah, there's a lot of concern.
This is a very tough schedule. So maybe if they get beat up early when they play some more teams on their level that they're going to have a little bit of value down the stretch. Yep. Or are they going to perhaps mail it in? But back to Baltimore really quick. You talk about depth in terms of a running game. Dude. Your best running back is usually your quarterback being Lamar Jackson. And he had 54 yards today. But Mark Ingram,
yep.
Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins only had two carries, but had that big 44-yard run today. Baltimore just gets it. They draft the right talent for what they have. And Baltimore is becoming that team we watch on the NFL draft like, oh, yeah, that's a total Ravens pick. You know, even though Ozzie Newsome isn't running the show anymore, it's like a really good pick. And now we're going to get that AFC title game that everybody thought we were going to get last year that we didn't get. Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans had other ideas, but we're finally going to get that rematch. I'm seeing three, mostly 52 on the total. Look, the two favorites in the AFC facing off. I'm wondering, though, if there's going to be a little value on Kansas City because they were sluggish today.
Yep.
And now it's like they got their scare. Now they got to go back on the road. So you would expect a more focused Chiefs team, I think, coming out of the gate. But Baltimore has made their wins look easy. I mean, they look like they're on cruise control.
And I don't know about you. Like you said, like cruise control is a really good way to put it. They did not look like they were really trying very hard at this game. Like it wasn't an overly impressive win.
There were just holes. There were so many holes. Because I would be in and out of that game because I didn't bet that game today. It kind of scared me off. I leaned Houston, but I begged off because I'm just not confident in that team. But I looked at that game and it just seemed like Baltimore had so much wide open green space in front of them all day.
Yep. And so here's the other thing about this. When you talk about the number, this is what I find really interesting. So again, we talk about these home field advantages, everything. Baltimore is an empty stadium. They don't have any fans in the stands. So we talk again, home field advantage, right? How much is home field advantage in an empty stadium worth? Is it worth one just because you have to travel? Let's say it is worth one. Mm-hmm. Is Baltimore 2 points better than Kansas City? Because I would say no. And to your point about value in the line, when you look at three, initially, I think people think, okay, Baltimore's at home. Three, that makes sense. In today's game, though, when there's nobody there, does it make sense?
But this will be a good two. This will be a two-way action game, I think. I think you're going to see a lot of support for both sides. It's going to be, you know, like a couple games that we saw this week where it's like you got really smart guys on both sides. It's just, do you think your side is smarter than the other side? Initial lean would be Kansas City, though.
Yep, mine would be as well, taking 3 points. And I would assume there wouldn't be really much reason to move off of three. And I think this is just going to be there all week by the time we get to kickoff. And we'll see what this number is. But initially, if I'm getting a full 3 points with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, I would be very interested in what they have to bring because I'm with Wes. One, not only home field, but two, maybe being a little undervalued after what happened with the Los Angeles Chargers earlier today. It's the opening lines here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Let's continue our roll here through, and we'll talk with Matt Youmans about what we saw this week and spin this forward. Youmans is on the horn right now, at Matt Youmans 24/7 up on Twitter. Matt, let's start with what we were just talking about here, and we'll get to some of the biggest topics of the day. But Kansas City and Baltimore, your initial thoughts going forward here into week three, because it sounds like Wes Reynolds and I are in lock and step here, and Kansas City plus three next week seems like a pretty tempting side.
Yeah, the Chiefs are who we thought they were, and the Chargers let them off the hook today. They really did. I thought the Chargers in a couple spots needed to be aggressive. If you're going to beat the Chiefs, you can't be conservative. You can't be afraid. You got to be aggressive and roll the dice. And I think the Chargers were too conservative and let the Chiefs off the hook. But also, I wasn't that surprised. John DeSimone from Canada is a really good golf handicapper. He's in the circuit contest, and he told me his top play this week was the Chargers. And, you know, the more you look at that game, it was a little bit of a look-ahead spot for the Chiefs. They also had some extra time off, which might not have been a great thing. You know, after they opened the season on that Thursday, they had extra time off. They're going into L.A. to play in a stadium that's empty. Sometimes that can be a little bit of a downer. They got off to a slow start today. I thought the Chargers probably should have won that game, but they do what the Chargers do, and they found a way to lose it. How about Harrison Butker?
Yep.
This guy hit field goals from 53, 58, 58, and 58. He had to hit that 58-yarder twice, and he made one early in the game. I'm not going to downgrade the Chiefs one bit from what happened today. And the Ravens are just as good as we thought they were going to be coming into the season. You know, I had the Ravens as my pick to win the AFC. I was actually kind of hoping this number would open 3.5. I would take 3.5 with the Chiefs. I would lean to the dog here, but I don't have a real strong opinion on it because I think the Ravens are a tough team to bet against right now. They're rolling. It's kind of one of those games where, hey, these teams look like equals, and give me three with Patrick Mahomes. I heard you guys talking about it, and I don't disagree.
Yep. Hey, you know, as I'm curious too, your thoughts, like the way I was setting it up too, right? We talk about like the home field thing, Baltimore, no fans in the stands. If we're saying like 1.5 points for a home field, right? Do you think the Ravens essentially are 1.5 points, 2 points better than the Kansas City Chiefs? I don't believe that is. So even going further, like that's why I also see value in this line is I think people are going to look at this and be like, okay, Ravens are at home. Three makes sense, but this is a different type of home field. That's not the home field that we are used to, as we know in years past.
Right. You know, and to be honest, Ravens haven't been great right at home the last couple of years. You know, last year, they won a similar game like this last year against the 49ers. I know Wes remembers this one well. We talked about it. You do too, JVT. The 49ers went in there last year. It was really grinded out, tough game. I think the Ravens won by a field goal. It was a 20-17. And I could see this being a similar type of game with the Chiefs, probably a little higher scoring game. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure what the home field advantage number is at this point. Going into the season, I was working off 1.5 being the new home field advantage with no fans. I'm not really sure if that's the way the odds makers are building these numbers right now. It kind of still seems like it's 2.5 or 3 in most cases. I mean, I would have to look at Steve McKinnon's power ratings and point spread weekly. I would assume you have Baltimore. You might have Baltimore power rated 1 point ahead, 1 point better than KC at the most at this point, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. And Matt, we were just talking about the Super Bowl winner from last year, so let's transition to the Super Bowl loser, and you had mentioned him briefly, the San Francisco 49ers. Opening line, pretty much 4. There's some 4.5 out there. They go face the Giants, but JBT and I talked about them in the first hour. San Francisco is the absolute walking wounded here with Jimmy G going to be out, Raheem Mostert, who knows when he's going to be back. D Ford missed today. I know there's going to be guys I'm leaving out. Nick Bosa carted off the field, Solomon Thomas, George Kittle, Sherman didn't play today. So now you're seeing -4 against the Giants, who, of course, losing Saquon Barkley more than likely for the season. So how do you handicap this type of game? I know you were on the Giants today, and I didn't end up betting that. We were talking about that last night. I was kind of scared on that Giants-Bears game, didn't know where to go. But I know you follow that team closely. How would you handicap this game with all of these injuries involved?
Yeah, the Giants today had their chances. I think the Bears are the luckiest team on the planet right now. They could easily be 0-2, and they're 2-0. But the Giants, without Saquon Barkley, took that game to the last second. I'm not sure I want to play the Giants next week. I know this number right now is, what, 4.5? Like you said, the 49ers, I expected the Super Bowl hangover from this team. I picked Seattle to win the NFC West. I'm not surprised that the Niners are struggling. You know, injuries tend to happen. And I thought San Francisco's defense had slipped a little bit in the second half of last season. But these injuries are out of control for the 49ers right now. I mean, and you have players talking about the turf at MetLife Stadium. Yep. And how it's dangerous for the players. They really don't want to go back and play the Giants next week. So I got my win with got my cover with the Giants today. I'll probably just go ahead and back off the Giants in this game. I think the number is about right. I would have made the number probably 5.5. I still think, you know, overall talent, the Niners have a big edge. If you watch the Giants today, that's just not a very talented football team. You take Saquon Barkley off the field, you don't have a lot of weapons. Daniel Jones played pretty well today, but again, turnovers are going to be an issue with him. I actually think both of these teams are fade material going forward, and this is probably a game I'm going to pass on.
Yeah. You and I were talking about that Giants game earlier in the week. Kind of felt lucky to get in there and get that one if you got a good number. Humans, I wanted to ask you, do you think now, as it sits at 8-11 here on the West Coast, that Dan Quinn and his special teams unit realize that they don't have to let the ball go 10 yards?
You know, it's inexcusable for something like that to happen at the NFL level. I was talking about this with Adam Candy and Amal Shaw a couple hours ago. It's, you know, that's the type of thing you see in high school where kids don't know the rule. And that just can't happen at this level. And, you know, we've said this about Dan Quinn, JVT. I think you and I said it probably about 8 weeks in a row last year. Dan Quinn, is he going to be fired this week? Is he going to be fired this week? The Falcons saved his job with a good run after they started 1-7 last season. They had a good finish to the season and saved him. I don't know if that was a good thing for the Falcons or not. Probably not. I think at some point they're going to have to move on from him. It's going to be sooner or later. And that, you know, that brings up a very interesting spot this week. You got 11 teams in the NFL right now that are 0-2. And some of those teams are hopeless. Some of those teams still have hope. I think the Falcons might still have some hope because they have such a powerful offense. I mean, there's no way they should have lost that game to the Cowboys today, but they did. Do they bounce back here as 3-point favorites over the Bears, who, like I said, are the luckiest 2-0 team in the league? I still think people are going to look to play the Falcons here as short home favorites, as 3-point home favorites. And I don't disagree. I think it's kind of like Dan Quinn's last stand. If he doesn't get the win this week, that might be it for him. But we've said that how many times now?
Yep. And the offense for Atlanta humans has been great. We gave out some of the numbers, but for those who are just joining us, through two games, humans, the Falcons are averaging 443 yards per game, 5.94 yards per play, 32 points per game, but they're 0-2. But now they get a Bears team that we saw give up a really big lead to Detroit, allowed the New York Giants to stick around. Like, this is a really intriguing side here for Atlanta if that offense continues. And Calvin Ridley, by the way, continues to break out and be a fantastic weapon for the Atlanta Falcons.
No doubt about it. You know, for years we talked about Julio Jones, and right now it's Calvin Ridley who's the touchdown machine for the Falcons. And I'm really impressed with their offense. Dan Quinn's supposed to be a defensive guy. He came over from Seattle. He's been anything but a defensive guy here the past couple of years. So as much as I dislike the Bears, I probably lean to the Falcons in this spot because, like I said, the Bears are just this 2-0 record's a mirage with the Bears right now. They should probably be 0-2 or at best 1-1.
Yeah, Matt, JVT and I were talking about this game last hour. This kind of reminds me a little bit of the Vikings-Colts spot today where it's like you look at it at initial glance like how the hell can the Colts be favored? They just lost to Jacksonville. It's like how can Atlanta be a favorite over Chicago? They're 2-0. I think this is going to be kind of the public maybe leaning more towards Chicago and then maybe some of the wise guys come in on Atlanta. But another interesting spot that I wanted to get your opinion on, we talked about the Chiefs earlier, the Chargers, their opponent today. Look, They had that game won. They had that game in control. The Chiefs looked DOA. It was 17-9. Couldn't get a touchdown on the board. Justin Herbert makes a mistake, and then let Patrick Mahomes and company takes advantage of it. But now you got the Chargers getting Carolina coming in next week, who's 0-2. Chargers laying 6 points. I don't know if there's much of a difference in the line if Taylor is healthy and he goes versus Herbert, but boy, this seems like kind of a tough spot for the Chargers on the surface, having all of that energy dumped into possibly beating the Super Bowl champs and losing today.
Yeah, exactly. I think it could be a little bit of a flat spot for the Chargers. And, you know, the quarterback situation with the Chargers is interesting. I think Anthony Lynn, being a coach, he's got to win now. He's probably going to lean to the veteran because he knows Tyrod Taylor's not a guy who turns the ball over. He knows what he's going to get with Tyrod, with Justin Herbert. Yeah, he was up today, but he's going to be up and down as a rookie, and he's going to be more volatile. And I think a veteran coach who really needs a win and has to win to keep his job is probably going to lean to the veteran if Tyrod can play. But, you know, on the flip side, what about the Carolina Panthers, and what is Christian McCaffrey's status? So I think it's kind of tough to handicap that game. If you take McCaffrey off the field, I'm not sure what the Panthers are going to have offensively. They scored 17 points today against the Bucks, and without McCaffrey, I wouldn't like their chances much. But, you know, we've said this about the Chargers over and over. I don't think it changes whether it's Phillip Rivers at quarterback or Tyrod Taylor or Justin Herbert. You really can't lay points with this team. Chargers are better in the underdog role, and they flop a lot of times in the favorites role, so I am not going to be laying the points with the Chargers.
All right, Matt Eumanns with us. Eumanns, let's go to another game that I'm pretty interested in here, just from to watch it, and if this team's healthier, how much better they could be. The Detroit Lions have built early leads in their first two games here. They had the 14-3 lead over Green Bay today and then completely fell apart, pretty banged up defensively. We know about the big lead they had over Chicago in week one, so we've seen flashes of this offense perform very well. Now you get Arizona. Arizona right now 6.5 next week at home, so a similar situation as it were this week. I have not been overly impressed with Arizona's passing attack. It's just that Kyler Murray has been insane in terms of his mobility the first 2 weeks. What do you make of this matchup? Because we have seen the look ahead at Arizona 3.5, now essentially sitting at a full touchdown.
Yeah, this number seems kind of high to me. Yep. I know the Lions, you know, blew a 17-point lead against the Bears, and they blew another lead and got run out today by the Packers at Lambeau, but still 6.5. I just don't see this 6.5 sticking here. I think that's going to be a play by some sharp guys taking the points with the Lions. Matthew Stafford, you know, aside from pick six, he's playing at a pretty high level. And I think, you know, you remember these teams played in week one last year at Arizona, and the Lions blew a big lead and had to settle for a tie. I still don't like – I think Arizona's a young team that hasn't been in the favorites role too often. I know Wes, you know, likes to talk about things like this. You know, are the Cardinals ready to be big favorites each week? I don't think so. You know, it's one thing when you're facing the Washington football team, but the Lions have more offensive firepower. The Lions are going to be on edge a little bit, being 0-2 going into this game. I'll probably, as much as it burned me to lose that game to the Bears in week one with the Lions, at least I passed on the Lions this week. I'll probably be on Detroit here, taking the 6 or 6.5 at Arizona this week.
And while you mentioned the Washington football team, they get the Cleveland Browns this week. And boy, this is, I wonder if this is a game where you're going to agree with me, Matt, where it's like, stay away from this one because the Browns are going to find a way to be the Browns and not cover. They absolutely dominated Cincinnati in the Thursday night game. Still don't get ahead of the number, but you look at Washington, they got a little offense going in the second half, but Arizona let their foot off the gas. So would this just be a stay away from you, or you see any edge here?
You said it. This would be a stay away for me. I'm not going to lay the 6.5 with the Browns. I still think they're an immature team. Kevin Stefanski hasn't impressed me so far. They should have beat the Bengals by 2 touchdowns, and they let Joe Burrow tear them up. You know, essentially, what was he, 37 for 61 passing, and they sneak in the back door and lose that game by 5. I just don't trust the Browns right now. You know, when you're laying a number like this, no, I'm not going to lay the points with the Browns. I'll probably pass.
But do you still value Kevin Stefanski over your moniker, Larry the Cable Guy, Freddie Kitchens? Or are they at least in better shape with this guy, or have you seen enough to make that determination?
Wes, you could have a scarecrow as head coach, and he'd be an upgrade from Freddie Kitchens, okay?
Very succinct, and it also makes sense. All right, Wes, excuse me, humans, let's go to one more real quick before we get you out of here. I asked this to Wes, and I'll ask you. What number are the Jets playable against Indianapolis next week? 10?
Okay, the Jets are catching 9.5. I'm not playing the Jets under any circumstances. I would have to get like 14 to think about it. I'm serious too.
No, I'm with them.
I'm not playing. The Jets are a complete mess right now. I mean, you know, I don't think these guys really want to play for Adam Gase and Greg Williams. And this is not a team I want to take the points with. If I'm playing a dog, I want to play a dog with a good quarterback, a good coach. You know, a team I respect, and that right now the Jets are just not showing anything. So it's no. I would, even if you gave me 10, I'm not going to bite, JBT. Sorry. I was on the Colts today, and I thought the Colts looked more like we expected them to look.
Matt Eumanns, you can follow him on Twitter at MattEumanns247. You can also watch him on My Guys in the Desert Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 Eastern here on the Sports Betting Network. Eumanns, good to talk to you, man. Thank you.
Okay, you bet.
Yep, you got it. All right. Matt Eumanns, I kind of agree with that. I mean, at some point there's going to be a buy-in spot here on the New York Jets. Don't know when it is.
I've used them twice in contest plays, and that's why I'm 3-2 both weeks and not 4-1, because two losses with the Jets, that's enough to stomach for me.
I was one of the few people who got 7 week 1 against Buffalo, and it didn't even matter. So I would agree, being burned by the Jets a little bit as well. All right, we'll come back. We're not done. I want to get into details on that Cleveland-Washington game, because that's actually pretty fascinating, because the one thing I've been impressed by with the Cleveland Browns is their offensive line. And that can match up pretty well with a front seven that's actually really underrated still. All right, the opening lines here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. All right, Wes, we asked humans about it. What's your thoughts here as we roll through a couple more games we have yet to get to on the opening lines? Washington and Cleveland. Cleveland initially a 6.5-point favorite here against the football team. That pass rush really didn't do much for them against Arizona. And like I mentioned in going out into the break, Cleveland, I thought the one thing that I was impressed by, and I'm with humans, I thought they should have won that Thursday night game by 2 touchdowns. I think they should have been relatively unhappy with the final result. I don't know if they got a finger Cincinnati did on Baker Mayfield. That offensive line through two games has been actually kind of impressive, both run blocking and pass blocking.
Yeah, no sacks allowed by that Browns offensive line. And then you look at the numbers they put up, 7.5 yards per play for Cleveland Browns, to you and Matt's point, which I completely agree with. They should have won this game by double digits. 7.5 yards per play. Cincinnati only had 4 yards per play. And Matt mentioned it in the previous segment. Burrow had to throw the ball 61 times, 37 of 61. And I know, young arm guy, and he's got all the potential in the world. That offensive line may get him killed before he can reach his prime, which worries me for his long-term future. But, you know, Browns really, I guess they struggled a little bit on third down to get off the field. And actually, Cincinnati was 5 of 5 on fourth down in that game. So I don't know how much I want to downgrade the Browns. I think the only reason why I think Cincinnati was getting that money in that Thursday night game, or really the line didn't move, was like, is there any other reason because it's the Browns. Right. Now, it's the Browns is a legitimate reason, but I don't think legitimate enough. Now, Washington, that was one I did lose on the day. I took a chance with them. I just thought maybe Arizona lays an egg in the spot off,
you know,
the big
and
road.
I'll say I didn't play it, but I would agree with that. Like, if I was going to play it, it was going to be Washington. Yeah. And even this week, I'm just not comfortable with Arizona 6.5-7. You know?
Yeah. I think maybe it was just Washington's offense clearly behind the defense, even though they got a little bit going in the second half. Terry McLaurin ended up having very good numbers because Patrick Peterson was going to totally shut him down. Yep. But Dwayne Haskins is still a second-year quarterback,
yep.
and he still has a lot of evolving to do. You know, Washington, too, when they were down 20 to nothing. Riverboat Ron, not so much Riverboat Ron. They're kicking that field goal. I mean, I know
gotta
you don't want to get shut
game
out.
A three-score game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like, okay, you have no chance. And then he didn't. Then at the end, when it was 27-15, he doesn't use the timeouts. He had he was like a Vic Fangio on Monday night with Denver last yep. week. I guess he thinks he starts out with five timeouts in Cleveland in the first half next week. But nevertheless, I'm not sure what I want to do with this game. I think Cleveland's the right side. I think Cleveland's probably a definite teaser candidate yeah. Down to about one or like a half a point for sure.
I do think I would agree with that, too, by the way. I think Cleveland's a little undervalued, and it's actually so – Thursday ultimately didn't get in because I was waiting for 5.5 and I didn't get in time. And ultimately mm-hmm. it worked for me, right? Because
yeah.
they ended up not covering even though they should have. But I think it works in my favor because I think I'll be on them this week against Washington. And you alluded to the issue with me with the Washington football team. Their defensive front is great. Their defense can keep them in games. Against the Philadelphia Eagles, we're talking about 3.4 yards per play. Against Arizona, 5.3 yards per play. This offense still is not there.
Yeah, what you said about the defense is true, and our friend John Murray over at Westgate Superbook, a longtime Washington football team, well, a recent Washington football team fan, but longtime former name fan of that team, he said, you know, their win total, I can't really go under their win total because their defense, I think, is going to be too
right.
good, but this offense is putrid, and I mean, Terry McLaurin, I think, is a really good player out of my hometown of Indianapolis, but not a lot of real support on that offense. They don't really have a dynamic running back. Haskins still figuring it out. They're trying to take baby steps with them. So, gosh, Cleveland in a teaser, I think, would be the way to go.
Also, let's talk about Cleveland's opponent from this week, of course, the Cincinnati Bengals. Now they get to go on the road to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. A little extra time to prepare. What I find pretty interesting about this one, though, is the fact that the market really hasn't budged on the number here for Philly. And in fact, when it got reposted today, went from 5.5 to 6, despite the struggles for the Eagles.
Yeah, the Eagles, it seems like it should be a get-right game for a team that's a bottom feeder like Cincinnati with a rookie quarterback going on the road again. But, boy... You mentioned it at the top of the show when we were talking about the Eagles game today against the Rams. And I've always said this. Carson Wentz not the same since that injury a couple years ago. He's just not the same. He doesn't have the same dynamic at all. And I think that line, even though it's held up today, you wonder when those issues are going to materialize again.
Yep. I'm interested in this because I think Philadelphia is a little – I still have faith in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I still have faith. But ultimately, they got to get a little bit healthier, and they got to get better defensively because it was really embarrassing performance today for their defense. All right, we'll come back. We have plenty to get to. A couple more games left for next week in the National Football League. Also, Sunday Night Football is final, so we'll get to that and those two teams, what they will do next week as the Seattle Seahawks move to 2-0 after a goal line stand on Sunday Night Football against the New England Patriots. Patriots have an interesting matchup next week against the hometown Raiders, which we'll get to, but the Raiders have yet to play because they're on Monday night. This is your last chance to subscribe to VSiN before our rates increase. Get the Pro Football Betting Guide with over 100 pages of NFL betting analysis, the College Football Betting Guide with insights on every team, plus daily emails, including our experts' best bets on every sport, 24/7 video streaming, weekly betting analysis for every NFL team, Point Spread Weekly, our digital betting magazine. Sign up now. Next week, prices are going to be higher. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to lock in your subscription, including our football betting guides at our best prices of the year. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. It's the opening lines here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Jonathan Von Tobel, Wes Reynolds with you here. So let's get to it. We have our last final of the day in the books. Very good football game. Seattle Seahawks get a big win, 35-30. They close as a 5-point favorite here at the South Point. Is that true? Look at that. I didn't realize that it had closed as a 5 here at the South Point Hotel and Casino. Regardless, A lot more 4.5s across the board here. Seahawks get the win, mostly get the cover, depending on where you look for that number. And indeed, here at the South Point, close 5. Here's the thing. I'm going to say this right now. This is my declaration, Wes Reynolds. I've watched 2 games of the New England Patriots. I watched that first game a second time during the week against the Miami Dolphins. Watching this game here today, I think this offense has a really high ceiling if Cam Newton's going to be healthy throughout this entire year. I thought they were undervalued today. I would take them again. And even then, you drive all the way down, Cam Newton does, to the goal line. They go with a heavy set. Essentially, they're just going to run power left into the end zone from like the 2-yard line. They get stuffed because they went really obvious with it. I think if Belichick had another shot at it, he wouldn't call something like that. Here's the thing. I like this Patriots team from what I've seen through the first 2 weeks.
Well, and Seattle, I think, tried to stack the box against the run. 25 carries for 67 yards, yep. 2.7 YPC for New England. Not the best numbers, but Cam looked more comfortable throwing the football despite the fact that he had an interception. But look, he's going to grasp
9 yards per attempt, by the way, yes, for Cam Newton today.
Yes, he's going to grasp the offense more and more each week because – keep in mind, no preseason games, no real training camp. He was a very late signee in general in terms of the free agency calendar. But I do think that this offense is going to get better. Look, I'm not the biggest fan of Josh McDaniels after he took the Indianapolis Colts job, our Colts, and then decided to spurn him. Jilted him, even though I'm happy with Frank Reich. I wasn't last week. I'm happier this week at least. But I do agree with you. I think that the Patriots have a high ceiling on offense. This is a little bit better team. I still think the Bills are the favorite to win the division, but they're not a favorite by a ton, and they were kind of a lukewarm favorite. Like, I think, what were the Bills? Maybe a little over even money, and then the Patriots were like maybe 3-2 or somewhere in that range. So it wasn't that much of a discrepancy. High-scoring game here in a primetime game, which is usually not good for the sports books because public is always going to bet the primetime game totals over. And they had been going under of late, but two over so far this week. Favorite and over eventually get the money here, which is never good in a primetime game for any type of sports book.
No, it is not. So the Seattle Seahawks, indeed, again, and here's the positive for the Seattle Seahawks. So as we spin this forward, too, by the way, the New England Patriots will take on the Las Vegas Raiders. We have yet to see the Raiders in action. They play on Monday night against the New Orleans Saints. Seattle, on the other hand, as you look at what they did tonight, because you do get a win, you move on to 2-0. The Seahawks, they off next week? No, they get Dallas. Excuse me. Yes. They get Dallas. Sorry, I couldn't find them on my screen real quick. Before we get to that, though, and you know, right now it opened, look ahead, 3.5 opening spread for this week, 4.5. Now we're still looking at 4.5. We had talked about this last week, and it looks like the Seahawks are into this era now, which they very well should be, the hashtag Let Russ Cook era. 21-28 today, 288 yards, 5 touchdowns, 10.3 yards per attempt for Russell Wilson. This Seahawks team needs to keep this up because they have a very, very deep receiving core. They have Russell Wilson, one of the best, if not the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. They can do this, like in terms of compete for a Super Bowl and get a top overall seed in the NFC if they maintain this direction with their offense.
And they've got a quarterback, to Russell Wilson's credit. One of the things he's always been good at is taking care of the football. He will kind of go into that fetal position and make sure he protects that ball and take that sack if he can't get away.
And not to cut you off, that interception today was not his fault.
No.
It hit his tight end. I think it was Greg Olsen in the hands, bounced off of it, deflection, returned for a touchdown.
And looking forward to next week with Seattle, 4, 3.5, kind of in that range, even some 4.5s out there. Dallas still has the injury concerns. Leighton Vander Esch now on IR. Yep. Sean Lee on IR. Sean Lee, unfortunately, just can never stay healthy. But Tyron Smith, neck injury, questionable for next week. I always think that that's big when the Cowboys aren't at full strength on the offensive line. They had a nice comeback, so do they carry that momentum over next week? Because I don't think this is going to be a quote-unquote flat spot for Seattle. This is going to be one of the national games, probably the national game late afternoon on Fox. So they're going to be up for the Dallas Cowboys. So this number looks pretty right to me. So I don't want to necessarily take the Cowboys off a game that on the scoreboard, even though the stat sheet indicated otherwise, that they should have lost. So I'm going to wait a little bit on this one.
Yeah, I like Seattle and right now as I look at it. I want to see where this number goes. I'll be really curious if it starts to dip below 4.
Because you may see Dallas get a little bit of support here because
Mike McCarthy's a genius all of a sudden.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolute brilliant. And then, I mean, because Seattle comes off that primetime game, and Seattle was outgained in this game, but it's not like their offense was bad. I just the defense, I think, look, they forced Cam to throw and beat him down the field, and he was able to do it a couple times.
So let's look at it from this perspective, too, really quickly. As we look at the New England side one more time, we do have one game under the belt for the Raiders, right? We haven't seen them play this week, but we did see them take on Carolina. And defensively, I thought they weren't going to be a great team. They showed it week one. The first line we saw for Patriots and Raiders for this coming week was 6.5 off the board now. And obviously because the Patriots are playing, go back up. And then when the Raiders play, it'll go back down. My initial thought is Monday night, Raiders, home, Saints, shorter week. Got to go take on New England. If it's under a touchdown, I think I'm in on New England.
Yeah, and I do kind of like the Raiders on Monday night against New Orleans. Not because just because of the injury to the receiver, Michael Thomas, but this is a big game for the Raiders. I mean, even though you don't have any fans at Allegiant Stadium, this is your first game in a new city. You would expect that they're going to put everything they've got into this game. And if it's a competitive game and if they get a win, short-term turnaround, like you mentioned, is their tank going to be a little bit on empty? So New England would certainly be the early look for me, and I'm sure they'll be a highly used teaser candidate, maybe America's teaser next week. But anything under 7, I would have to look at New England just in the situation, even though they're off a big Sunday night loss.
And like you were talking about, the Raiders being a somewhat popular pick this week. So if they cover on Monday night, you could be getting a cheaper line.
Right. It might be 6, maybe 5.5. I'm sure it'll probably stay in that 6 range, though.
All right, when we come back, our last game, we have yet to get to it, involves that team that's going to be playing on Monday night here in Sin City as well. That is the New Orleans Saints taking on the Green Bay Packers. That's our Sunday night matchup for week 3. So we'll take a look at it because the Green Bay Packers, once you hear some of these numbers, because it seems like Aaron Rodgers is in the midst of the FU season, we'll see if he can continue that torrid offensive pace that he's been on against the New Orleans Saints next week. We'll also take a brief look at college as well because it was an interesting week. I learned some lessons and took some bumps in college, but we'll take a look at the upcoming week of college football. Some big programs return to the field. Last few minutes here on the program, it is the opening lines. If you weren't with us earlier, just a reminder that the opening line show as of today is now 2 hours. So we have 2 hours of content. Matt Eubanks was with us earlier. Ben Fox is with us in the first hour as well. VSiN.com/podcast is going to be the spot if you want to catch up on this show as we look ahead to the next week in the National Football League. But again, 2 hours, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time is our new slot, and that is going to be the slot going forward here on Sunday nights. And I say here and us, Wes Reynolds, alongside as well. So we have one game left. We have saved the best for last. Seems like on the surface a very good game, right? The Gunslingers, so one of them very old, one of them getting there. Aaron Rodgers taking on Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. Saints, of course, have yet to play. They will play on Monday night this week against the Las Vegas Raiders. But we did see the Green Bay Packers play today. And we did see Green Bay continue this torrid offensive stretch through two games. Green Bay's offense, to reiterate, 42.5 points per game, 7.1 yards per play, 67% completion for Aaron Rodgers, 8.2 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. Here's the catch. This is going to be by far the best defense of the three opponents that Green Bay has faced in the New Orleans Saints. Very good defensively, both secondary and against the run. You took on Minnesota, who's rebuilding their defense in their secondary. You took on Detroit, who was down 3 defensive starters, one of which was in the secondary. I think Green Bay's good offensively. I don't think they're this good.
Right. And look, the Saints, that's kind of like burying a little bit of a buried lead here, if you want to say that, because everybody thinks offense with New Orleans. strength of their team is this defense.
I was going to say, their defense is ahead of their offense, I would think.
I think so, too. The addition of Malcolm Jenkins, I do think, gives them leadership in the secondary. The pass rush, you want a little more consistency, even though they got three sacks the first week against Tampa Bay. But Derek Davenport and those guys, he's kind of got to be the guy, the former first-rounder, that steps up a little bit. But I do like this defense. I think they got a solid offensive line. The Saints' biggest drawback is what everybody sees as their biggest strength, and it's the 41-year-old quarterback. Can he make a play down the field anymore? And how creative the Saints have to be in terms of their play calling. Sean Payton is going to have to be very creative this year, and he's going to have to find a way. Because if you look, remember the Minnesota game last year in the wild card where they lost?
Yeah.
The one long pass play they hit down the field was Taysom Hill.
Yep.
So they got to find a way to get him the ball. Drew Brees is still, I think, going to be accurate. The mind is there, is still sharp. His efficiency numbers were some of the best of his career last year, but he can't just make that big play anymore.
He averaged 5.4 yards per pass attempt last week.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Exactly. So you're having to be a little bit more creative in terms of your running game, in terms of getting Taysom Hill the ball on reverses, letting him throw the ball. And Taysom Hill can get the arm down there. I don't know if he's going to – I think they want him to be an everyday quarterback going forward, maybe in a year or two. But I know he's got the strength to throw that ball down the field. So we're going to see. Maybe Sean Payton's got some of his best gadget plays here. Green Bay, I think, is good. These numbers are impressive, but this is their biggest test. So we will see where this line turns up tomorrow, because I think maybe the Raiders do have a shot at the outright upset tomorrow in the debut here in Las Vegas of Allegiant Stadium.
I like it. All right. Well, that's every single game. And again, we can go back VSiN.com/podcast. It is the opening line show, right? A lot of football. Let's transition last few minutes here to college football, because of course we do have a very full slate next week as we start to see some more and bigger name programs, specifically the SEC, getting into action next week in college football. Let me ask you really quickly, as we spin this forward, about two big, and I think it was the premier game of the weekend. And of course we're talking about Miami taking on Louisville. And as we spin this forward into next week, your thoughts on this matchup. So Miami gets a win 47-34. High scoring affair, both offenses for the most part operating well. Thing that sticks out to me though, Wes, turnovers and mistakes for Louisville kept Western Kentucky in their game in week one. And then now we have here, or week one for them, and now we have in this loss to Miami, three turnovers, two lost fumbles, and the interception, again, allowing the Hurricanes to get a big win here.
The turnover chain was in effect last night, plus three turnovers for Miami, but this team also gave up 516 yards, and I think Miami does miss the kid, Gregory Russo, who I think was second in FBS in sacks last year, about 15 and a half sacks, surefire first-round pick in the 2021 draft next April. They miss him a little bit, and I think they haven't – that pass rush, I don't think, was really getting home very much last night. And I was talking with some folks over at Westgate Superbook here in town, and they were thinking Miami was going to be near two touchdowns. I was like, hold the phone here. Florida State's still got a very good defense. People are going to be lukewarm on them. Number one, Mike Norvell with contracted COVID-19, so he will not be coaching this next game. And obviously with Florida State, what their big problem is their offensive line. Poor James Blackman. I know that he's considered a disappointment, but he doesn't have any protection in front of him.
Their offensive line's been an issue for like 3 or 4 years
now. Yeah, it's amazing that a team like Florida State, I know the recruiting slipped a little bit, but it's not like they're the 60th ranked recruiting class. Right. Like they're in the Mountain West or something. They're an ACC school that's been a national championship program. You got to find some offensive linemen. And poor Blackman, fourth offensive coordinator, I think like his sixth play caller in his 4 years down there. But I think Miami's going to get the support here. So I think if you like Florida State in the points, I would wait. I would almost lean a little bit more to the under. I'm seeing some 57.5s, 58s, and that's dangerous with Miami, who's running a faster tempo with Rhett Lashley as the new OC, De'Arik King's best quarterback they probably had in 20 years at the U.
Yep, so opening lines, circa first to market with these as you look ahead for college football. Louisville is going to take on Pitt. Pitt is a 5.5-point favorite at the open over Louisville for next week in college football, and then you have Florida State, Miami, a 9-point favorite.
Yeah, I'm now seeing some 3.5s on Pitt, and Pitt 2-0. a little sluggish against Syracuse. I had the under in that game.
Shocking what happens when you're not playing Austin Peay, huh?
Yeah, fortunately didn't have to sweat it, but Syracuse has all kind of offensive line problems. Tommy DeVito got knocked out of the game. Culpepper came in, then DeVito came back. Syracuse, much better on defense than on offense. They're running that 3-3-5 that Tony White, the new DC, he coached under Rocky Long. You're a longtime follower of Mountain West football, and you know you can coach defense if you coach under Rocky Long.
Right.
So their defense has been a lot better. Pittsburgh, I'm still a little concerned about that offense. Kenny Pickett just has never impressed me. I know that they want to run a little bit more up-tempo. Mark Whipple is the offensive coordinator there, the former UMass coach, but I've never bought into this, so I'm not sure where I'm going. I think Pittsburgh is a very lukewarm favorite.
Yeah, Pittsburgh 5.5 at the open is pretty surprising. It's not surprising that the market's sharpened that up a little bit to under that 5.5 number. Anything? Let me ask you this, a general question, is again, we see some of these eight SEC teams now in action, say some of them. The SEC is back in action next week. In a lot of big spreads, Alabama opens a 22-point favorite over Missouri. We have Georgia, a 25-point favorite over Arkansas, which is interesting given Georgia's quarterback situation and what's happening there. Well, we have some big spreads in the SEC. LSU 16 over Mississippi State. How do you, or how did you handle at the beginning of the year, and how do you consider handling SEC teams that we have not seen in action yet?
Yeah, boy, this is a little bit tough because you've got a lot of new coaches in this league this year. Mike Leach at Mississippi State, because I think LSU is widely seen as a fade because of all the personnel they lost because of losing Joe Brady.
I was going to say, on the staff and on the field.
Who is now the Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator with Matt Rhule down there in Charlotte. And all of a sudden, you're bringing Mike Leach and the old Howl Mummy air raid to Stark Vegas with Mississippi State. So a total new system. So it's like people want to fade LSU, and rightfully so. But it's a little big of a big ask to have a team that's been limited in terms of practices. All these teams have been to, I think, go to the Mississippi State side, although I certainly can understand it a little bit. New coach at Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin.
Right.
So they are going to be facing the Florida Gators. I think Florida just under a 2-touchdown favorite, 13 pretty much the market consensus. And Florida's kind of that team that everybody thinks is going to rise up and win that East and get in that playoff, maybe be that second SEC team. I went against the grain a little bit and went with Texas A&M because I didn't want to go all chalk. Yeah. Alabama, Clemson, and all that and be predictable, even though I do have them.
I think a lot of people, and rightfully so, Kyle Trask was really impressive for them last year for Florida. And it's a very large step over a Felipe Franks. Unfortunately, Franks did his job, but you know, not exactly the talent level that Trask seemed to have. And I should note too, by the way, and you talked about this, and I think it's lost a little bit because what Joe Brady and that offense did for LSU. Don't forget, Dave Aranda's at Baylor now too.
Yes.
So like your primary coordinators are gone from that team last year.
Yes.
The offense in the mind that transformed Joe Burrow to like a quick slant 13 touchdown guy in the SEC to essentially like a 60 touchdown, you know, 7 million yard guy that we saw last year. All that is gone this year for LSU.
Yeah, the new OC, Steve Emsinger gets promoted to OC, and then Bo Pelini, the new defensive coordinator. So there's transition there. New coach also at Missouri, who I believe is playing Alabama. Eli Drinkwitz comes from Appalachian State. So new systems in place there in Columbia. And then also at Arkansas, Sam Pittman, who was on the Kirby Smart staff at Georgia, takes over at Arkansas. So I don't know how deeply. I think these are games that people want to bet because it's the Southeastern Conference.
Teams that you recognize. Yep.
Yeah, and it's all conference games, but I'm just not sure because they're starting so late how many practices they've gotten in. So these are games I'm going to be a little bit cautious with, I think, with the SEC going into the first week.
Yep, I would agree. Tightest spread that we're looking at in the Southeastern Conference right now, Tennessee, 3-point favorite over South Carolina, as you mentioned there. And then let's go over to the ACC because a couple of other teams that we did see in action over the weekend, like Duke, after a pathetic performance against Boston College, opens it up as a 9-point underdog with a total of 47 against Virginia. That Boston College team not playing in the ACC, actually playing a Texas State team that has some issues defensively, an 18-point favorite with a total of 60. NC State, Virginia Tech are going to get going, an 11-point spread, Tech favored with 57.5. And then you get to the Big 12 where Kansas State catching 28 against Oklahoma, TCU laying 2 to Iowa State. And those are some of the notable nines for this weekend. Oh, excuse me, that's the number I was looking for. Baylor 20-point favorite over Kansas after their game gets postponed over the weekend against Houston.
Also, two ranked teams battling this weekend. Cincinnati hosting Army, 11.5, which is about what I thought the number would be. This is a step up in class. Army smacked around Middle Tennessee State and Louisiana Monroe, but how bad are those two teams? They're certainly taking a step up in class here.
All right, that does it for the opening lines. Again, make sure you go to VSiN.com. You can check it out, VSiN.com/podcast. You can listen to any part of the show that you missed out on, and VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. It's the opening lines. We'll see you next Sunday night.